And you're listening to the Politics Roundtable on Louisiana Considered here on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. And we come to you Fridays to talk politics with our co-hosts, Stephanie Grace, columnist for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. Happy Friday, Stephanie.
Happy Friday.
And coming up today on the show, we'll be speaking with New Orleans Councilmember Joseph Giaruso, who was just reelected, and we'll also talk some politics for the upcoming December 11th elections and recap some of the governor's press conference. But before we get to any of that, let's bring on our first guest, Councilmember Joseph Giaruso, who easily cruised to reelection in the District A race. Councilmember, thank you so much for being here today.
Happy Friday. Thank you for having me.
Not a happy Friday for the Saints, though. I think that was a that was a tough game last night.
Right. And Taysom Hill is injured now.
And that's the latest news. But speaking of wins, I mean, council member, before we get to your reelection, I mean, just can you give the audience a sense of the district that you represent? Because I do think it's interesting when you see all the different neighborhoods that are that encompass this district.
Yeah, I think I either have the second largest or close to the third largest council district. District E is the biggest by land mass. And then I think it's a race between D and A. And it is a large district. And I have to remind people all the time that we run from the lake to the river. So you start with Lakeview and Parkview and City Park and Mid-City down to Holly Grove and Dixon, the Carrollton neighborhoods, Maple, Black Pearl, and then Uptown to about half of Jefferson. So it's interesting to me for two reasons. One is there's obviously a lot of neighborhood groups in that mix. And then one theme I repeat consistently is, even though it's so large and having gone now to about 450 neighborhood meetings, 80% of the issues are the same. And so it's really interesting to me that people think that potholes or trash not being picked up is endemic to my neighborhood. And I wish they had an access line to my emails and to our phone records so they can see. And I'll talk more about this, but that's something we're going to try and work on next term, is turning around some of that information publicly so people can see, based on the data that we have, what's going on in District A, more frontward facing, and people can see the trends that we're seeing.
You know, since we're talking about the districts and we are in a redistricting year, we're hearing a lot about that at the state level. Are we expecting much change in the council district level?
The answer, Stephanie, is a yes, but. So we just received the first round of numbers, and districts A, B, and E grew incrementally. Mm-hmm. I think districts A and E were about 2%, 3% growth, and district B was maybe less than 1% overall. But there is a seismic shift in districts D and C. And my math may be a little bit off here, but district C lost something like 10 to 12%.
Wow.
And then exactly. And then district D picked up something like 10 to 12 or 14%.
Interesting.
Yeah. My gut reaction is so much of what happened by people being pushed out of the pricing from Mid-City and the surrounding, even Treme, has really re-energized that Gentilly area.
Yep.
70122 is becoming extraordinary. So that is a very long way of saying, do I suspect there will be tweaks in A, B, and E potentially? Yes. But do I think the largest magnitude of change will involve District C and D?
And again, just for the listeners, C is Algiers plus the French Quarter, Marigny, Bywater, parts of Mid-City, I believe.
Correct.
And
correct.
D is Gentilly, like you said, it goes quite a long way along the lakefront, I believe.
Correct. And these are fighting words if you don't get these neighborhoods right.
Exactly. So I know.
I want to make sure I do it correctly. Lakeshore, Lake Vista, Lake Terrace, Lake Oak, Seabrook, and then parts of the Upper Ninth Ward too, in addition to the areas you described. So it is already a large landmass, but now the numbers are matching up too.
And council member, you mentioned you're hearing across the district concerns about potholes and the construction. I mean, it's hard to drive these days without having to do some detours because of all the construction that seems to be happening all over the city. Is there any progress on that front? You mentioned, you know, trying to make some more transparency with this, but ways that just these issues that are common, you know, concerns from everyday residents dealing with some of these issues.
Well, I think you got to break it into two different parts. So the second part, which is actually first, is what are the new contracts that are going to happen, and are they going to have more teeth to them and shorter timelines? Because at least one project in District A that's in the Faubourg, St. John, Mid-City area has 500 days for completion. And if you give a contractor, wow. I know, it's, for those who can't see, Stephanie's eyes just blew up, just blew up. So for people who have the visual, yes. And that's, it's an eye-popping amount. And what happens is the contractors then have an incentive to start work in one place and go to other places. And they're abiding by the terms of the contract that are set too far. So number one, how do we change what's going to be happening in the future to make it smaller in scale and to make the timelines significantly shorter, which the administration is committed to? I think the larger question, Patrick, that you're asking is, what about the contracts that are existing right now? And I think, you know, there's, to me, two different areas of emphasis. One has to be, what can the city do to push and or renegotiate or amend some of those contracts in order to get more favorable terms, particularly on the timeline front, and in addition to communication too. The second one is, I say, while you can be mad at the contractors, contracts have two parts. And so the city also needs to be administering those in such a way that the timeliness is being followed up on. And in my personal view too, there has to be a sort of a hierarchy of how it's done as well. So for example, one of the things I've harped on is if there's construction going on near schools, and particularly elementary schools, let's please make those a priority and preferably outside of schools season if we can. But those are the type of things that we need to kind of have in place and in motion to make sure that that more work is being done more consistently and then with sort of greater eyes on it too.
Yeah, as someone who just had to do a drop off for one of my children and could not because of the construction and and trying to explain to the construct like folks, so, but that's the fun of living in New Orleans, right? Dealing with these issues. And another one, the council member, when it comes to infrastructure spending, I know that's something that you've been concerned about and focused on the council. Can you give us a sense of where things are right now?
Yeah, this is actually an area when we talk about, and Stephanie, I'm going to reference probably throughout this conversation some of the pieces the TP, the advocate, has written over a period of time.
No complaints?
When we talk about sort of what's going on in the city and is there maybe a loss of confidence or a malaise, this is something we ought to be really excited about. And there is a lot of money that the city has at its fingertips that we're going to start energizing. So for the listeners, think about four separate buckets, two of which are being actively energized, a third is likely to be, and then there's a fourth. So number one is we still have the Katrina money that we're primarily talking about right now with the streets, and that is being used not only for street repair, but subsurface work too, drainage, water, sewer, which is all necessary to what happened post-Katrina. That's one. Number two is, and I know this seems like an eternity to go because of COVID and everything that's happened, but remember the voters approved a $500 million bond issuance in 2019. The city just sold the first tranche of those bonds because of the favorability of the rates. The city was going to sell it for $289 million the first bunch, and they actually were able to get $374 million on extraordinarily favorable terms. So essentially, you got close to $80 or $90 million more because of where the markets were and our capacity to bond out. So incredible work by the administration on making that happen. And then there's going to be another tranche of $200 million or more coming up behind that. That is also going to be used for infrastructure. Then, of course, we have the American Rescue Plan money, which is the third batch. And remember, the federal government has told us essentially you can use that money to replace revenue that's lost or really on incredible infrastructure purposes. And then four, the last one is, of course, the available infrastructure money that Congress just passed and potentially even more down the road.
Now, I mean, we had an announcement this week about water infrastructure, which makes you think sewage and water board. I know we have a lot of issues with rural water systems in the state, but sewage and water board, is that coming to us? Some of that?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is yes. And so a couple of things with that, Stephanie. Like, one is we got stuck because of the storm, but remember the administration, the council, energy, and sewage and water board are still hyper-focused on the substation at the Carrollton plant. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm segueing.
Which President Biden visited, I should say, on his tour to promote this bill.
Correct. And the turbines, just, and I'm not saying this to be funny, but the turbines at Sewage and Water Board are older than President Biden. Okay. Like the turbine.
That is funny.
That, okay. Well, thank you. So the turbines date back to World War I, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is time for them to be repaired. And at the same time, we're going to cut emissions by 45% as a result of having the substation there. The city has made a capital contribution of $20 million for something called frequency changers, which converts power to 60 hertz, the modern, or to 25 hertz. And then also the state has made about a $20 million capital outlay investment as well. So now it's just bridging the gap of the last roughly $30 million. And then, Stephanie, to your question, I think the first priority is honestly going to be the drinking water and filtration system. Mm-hmm. I know I've heard the executive director of Sewage and Water Board, Ghassan Korban, talk about that a good deal. And I think it gets lost in sort of the maze of billing problems and boil water advisories, et cetera. But New Orleans is no differently situated than other cities. And I think where the money, as I understand it, from the fourth batch, the infrastructure is really laser focused, is on this type of relief.
Drinking water. Right. It's EPA money,
and
we should say.
And again, you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden, along with co-host Stephanie Grace, and we're speaking with New Orleans Councilmember Joseph Giaruso. Councilmember, actually, Stephanie, I'll pass it back to you.
Okay. I wanted to turn to the budget, which the city council just approved. Pretty good news, surprisingly, huh?
I think remarkable news, and Stephanie and Patrick, one of the things I've asked for too is that I think understandably we budgeted somewhat conservatively too. And I know Omicron is on everybody's mind right mm-hmm. now, and hopefully one of the last variants. But if we do start having the bigger festivals, Mardi Gras, Jazz Fest, French Quarter Fest, et cetera, that our revenue may actually be higher than what we've projected for this year. So it's kind of incredible to think about a $1.5 billion budget for the city of New Orleans for upcoming year 2022. And I think not only seeing departments get back to what their funding was, who took some haircuts mm-hmm. because of COVID and the loss of sales tax revenue, but then also some other things that the administration, the council wanted to add this time around.
Right. And I should say sanitation, I know, is one of them. There's more money for sanitation. Tell us about, everybody wants to know, Jefferson got recycling back this week. We're down to once a week pickup. What's the future?
That's a great question. One that we asked during budget hearing, because we know it's on everybody's mind. And for listeners, I will tell you, as a council member, I am at the height of my powers in the 3 weeks before a budget meeting. That is when a council member can exert your most control. So this is what sanitation told us. With regards to Richards, which services roughly half of the city, what I sort of, if you look at a map, the southern hemisphere of New Orleans, mm-hmm. basically, the hope is that recycling and twice a week pickup may resume before the end of the year. Hmm. So
okay.
we're waiting to see what happens. And given that sanitation said that, we're going to give them a wide berth on that. And then what we were told on the metro area is that they're looking to rebid the contract, which I think mm-hmm. everybody knows. And that once the contract process is rebid, then we should start seeing some service resumption there too. I know recycling is a big deal, and how do we get to that as quickly as possible is important. Right.
So what's the timeline on the rebidding of the Metro contract? Do you know that?
I know it's going through the process right now, and I think it's supposed to be rebid in the first quarter of 2022.
Okay.
And again, you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden, along with co-host Stephanie Grace and Councilmember Joe Giarrusso. Stephanie, I'll give you the last question to the council member.
Okay. Something we heard about a lot on the campaign trail, more money to enforce the short-term rental ordinance. Is that in there?
The answer is yes. And I think the other thing too, Stephanie, is in addition to the money, it's going to be the mechanics also mm-hmm. as well. And we're going to be, I think, this next group extraordinarily focused on not only is there money available for lawyers and inspectors, but then what are the results of having more mm-hmm. money and more inspectors and more lawyers too?
Awesome. Okay. Well, Councilmember Giarrusso, thank you so much for joining us today here on Louisiana Considered.
Thank you for having me.
Again, you're listening to WWNO and WRKF. This is Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden, along with co-host Stephanie Grace. Just spoke with Councilmember Joseph Giarrusso. We also heard this past hour the press conference from Governor John Bel Edwards and some of the state's top health officials. Stephanie, looking ahead to the upcoming December 11th elections, key races, the Orleans Parish Sheriff's race, the several council races in New Orleans. There's a judicial runoff in Baton Rouge, and there's the big money, all the chips on the table, Slidell casino vote. what are you keeping? What is the most interesting race to you right now?
Well, the sheriff's race is just a knockdown dragout, I should say. And it's interesting. The incumbent, Marlon Guzman, has been in for 17 years. Susan Hudson, the independent police monitor, running against him. And it's really just kind of a battle of two big forces in New Orleans politics, I think. The criminal justice reform community that helped elect Jason Williams, who is supporting, he's the DA, of course, who's supporting Susan Hudson. Marlon Guzman, old school, kind of, you know, worked for Mark Morial. It's interesting to see, when you look at the primary results in the maps, you know, Guzman really had, he had a lot of the kind of middle class Black vote, and he had Lakeview, which kind of is traditionally Republican. So I think it's more the kind of law and order type of voters versus the criminal justice reform voters. And you look at the map and you see they're very concentrated in kind of parts of uptown and into Marigny and Bywater, places like that. So it's really, you know, it's going to be a very low turnout election. Both sides, I think, are the Hudson side was very energized. I think the Guzman side is now very energized, and they are really going at each other. Mm. And there's a lot of outside money, I should say, also. Yep. So now in the council, you know, there are five districts. Joe Giarrusso, who we just spoke to, is the only one who got reelected. So we have four big battles there, two open seats and two incumbents facing very significant challenges, Jay Banks and Cindy Huynh, being challenged by Leslie Harrison and Oliver Thomas. One thing that's interesting this week is that Helena Moreno, the city council president, reelected, came out and endorsed the challengers in both of those races against her colleagues. So we could have some very hard feelings come next year, or she could have quite the block behind
make for awkward council meetings right now. And back to the sheriff's race, you mentioned all the outside money pouring in. I think one of the interesting dynamics there is that, you know, the challenger is this new model similar to Jason Williams as the mm-hmm. when he ran as kind of the so-called progressive prosecutor. But this is the progressive sheriff candidate. And this is actually pretty new nationwide. There aren't many other examples of this. And I think that's one reason why we're seeing outside money coming in, is because this is really at the forefront of these right. criminal justice reform efforts that are happening at the ballot box.
And so much of it is about incarceration. And this sheriff, not every sheriff, remember, has the same responsibilities around the country. Not every county has a sheriff, but this sheriff, the main job is overseeing the jail, which historically has had a massive population. They've really whittled it down. It's of course under federal oversight. So it has improved and it has gotten much smaller. So the question is that, does Guzman get credit for that, or do the feds get credit for that? And what happens when it's turned back over to the sheriff's office for management?
And of course, it's hard to watch TV or listen to anything without hearing ads about the casino vote in Slidell. And again, still reading up on all the issues at play here. But it is also interesting to see all the money that's been poured into that race.
And Drew Brees. Right. So you know there's big money when Drew Brees is involved, right?
And Stephanie, obviously looking ahead to December 11th, I mean, we're not expecting, it doesn't sound like we'll be expecting a major turnout for this race.
No. I mean, something else I'd keep an eye on, though, is there's a library tax renewal that you'll recall last year, the Mayor Cantrell had put together kind of a big tax swap that would have kept the tax rate the same, but shifted some revenues from libraries. There was a real uprising against that. So this, what's on the ballot now, is just the renewal of what we had. And I think that's going to draw some people who are real kind of true believers in libraries. And you do not mess with library supporters, no. I think is one lesson from last year.
And again, you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden, talking politics with co-host Stephanie Grace of the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. Stephanie, looking to D.C. and the infrastructure a bill and everything that's been happening there. Obviously, former New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu was tasked to be the infrastructure czar. I mean, what's the latest? Have you heard anything about how this dynamic is going with all the infrastructure?
Well, the news this week was that the EPA basically announced funding this year nationwide for drinking water. $101 million is coming to Louisiana. Another $101 million each year for the next 4 years. Bill Cassidy made, you know, this is the, if you listen to the APA, this is the biggest single investment in water ever by the country. We, of course, have this network of aging systems and aging pipes and small communities that don't have the tax base and the kind of citizen base to, I guess, customer base to support, to do the work. So, you know, there's a hope for real improvement. Now you have Bill Cassidy trumpeting it. You don't have the other Republican members of Congress trumpeting it because they all voted against it. So I don't know what they're going to tell their constituents. Maybe they'll just stay very quiet. But Bill Cassidy he's out there. He wants to talk about this and he wants people to understand where it came from. And he wants them to know that he is one of the people in the room who negotiated this. And that's true. And then, you know, in terms of how it gets handed down to communities, Mitch Landrieu is going to be a big part of that. And what's so interesting to him is that he's been on the other end of it. He is, you know, dating back to Katrina when he was lieutenant governor, he's been kind of in the trenches trying to, you know, get rid of some of the red tape and the bureaucracy and get the money down to communities in ways that they can use it the way they see that they need it. So it's a really interesting perspective that I think will be there for the Biden administration.
And I just imagine we will keep seeing federal officials come down here to Louisiana for ribbon cuttings and other events to keep sort of touting this, especially with the former mayor as the czar.
Sure. And with election, you know, 2 years away and the feeling among Democrats that Biden really hasn't maybe done enough to, you know, show the world what he's done, to kind of advertise it. So.
Right. Well, we'll have to wrap up our discussion there. Again, thank you so much for joining us today. Co-host Stephanie Grace of the Times-Picayune and the New Orleans Advocate.
Thank you very much.
Also want to thank our earlier guest, Councilmember Joseph Giaruso, who was just reelected District A to a second term. And this has been Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden. You can always catch up on previous episodes by going to our podcast. Just search Louisiana Considered on iTunes, Spotify, Google, and subscribe and become a member. Have a great Friday.